Good morning. My name is Tim Porter. I'm one of the pastors here at Faith Community. Thank you for joining us here this morning. If this is one of your first times here with us, just want to thank you again for on this Labor Day weekend when you could be doing all kinds of things. You know, being down at the river, it's such a glorious day for the river, right? You could be down there, but no, you chose to be here in the rain and seek shelter under our fine roof. No, thank you for being here this morning. You know, we believe that God works in us in distinct ways when we gather together to worship Him and to learn from Him, from His scriptures. And so, this morning, if you sense that God's working in you and calling you to something, changing your heart, or maybe He's going to raise some questions for you today that you need to wrestle with, I'll be available right after the service, about 15, 20 minutes. If you have any questions about anything that I said during this teaching time, or if you're wondering, you know, how's God leading me right now? Give me some guidance, give me some wisdom. Come on up. I'd love to chat with you right after the service, okay? So today you can tell that we are starting a new series today, and I'm just like, I cannot contain the excitement that I have in my heart over this series, as we're going to be looking at two books in the Old Testament, the books of Ruth and the books of Esther. Why are we looking at these books, and why are we doing them now? One is that these books are storage of courage and loyalty. Both of these stories, as well, God is in some ways, He's hidden. He's a little bit distant, and still we see people acting in faith with courage and loyalty. And even though, especially in the book of Esther, God's name is never mentioned once, there's nothing religious mentioned in the book of Esther, except for Esther calls on the people of Israel to call a fast. God is distant from the text, but He is never absent. His steadfast love is working and moving, and His purposes are being worked out. And I think it's good for us to see what it looks like for us to move and to work and to live and to love with courage and loyalty when God seems hidden. The other is that these two stories have at their center heroines, female heroes. And I believe that we need more women heroes in our lives, especially women that our young girls and women here at Faith Community can look up to and aspire to be like, and that we men can learn from about what does it look like to be courageous and heroic and to live out the steadfast love of God. Ruth and Esther show us what courageous love looks like, what loyalty looks like in an age where cynicism and at times pessimism reigns. One of the biggest questions, it seems to me, that we need to ask about the Bible and about Christianity is if it's true. And I spent a lot of time in my other sermons talking about Christianity and the gospel and God being true, but there's almost an equally important question that we have to ask and really figure out figure out the answer to, so that we can actually trust the God who made us, and that is, what is this God like? What is He like? And that's one of the things that these books seek to answer, is what is God really like? Because Ruth and Esther are not just about courageous and loyal women, they're about a courageous and loyal God, a God that is steadfast in love and determined to accomplish His purposes to do good to His people. A God who is trustworthy and gracious and steadfast and faithful and personal and sovereign and good. And so today, as we begin this series in the book of Ruth and how God shows the abundance of His steadfast love to a woman named Naomi, we get a little glimpse here into Naomi's heart and what has happened to her heart, that she has become an embittered woman. She self-identifies. She says that she is bitter against God. And we're going to see in this book how God handles, loves, cares for, remains steadfast to a woman who is bitter at Him. Who's bitter at Him. What does God do with Naomi's bitterness? I don't know where you are right now on the distrust continuum. It's maybe that you're like Naomi today, that you are on the far right and you are bitter at God for the things that you have experienced in your life, and you feel like God has completely abandoned you and He is absent from your life, or even worse, that He is intentionally, willfully seeking to harm you. That's where Naomi is. Maybe you're there today. But maybe you're more on the mid-range, on the continuum of bitterness, maybe, or distrust. You're at the spot of more cynicism. You're cynical about life. And you look at the future sort of with a cynicism and trying to, a self-protectiveness of cynicism, just going, it's probably not going to go well for me. I don't want to really overcommit. I don't want to get hurt anymore. Or maybe you're hiding your bitterness. Many times we don't like to acknowledge that we're bitter, but a lot of the people around us know that we are. Why? Because they hear our sarcasm. Sarcasm is not just funny. It's not just a form of humor. It's a form of angry humor. Did you know that? Be careful. You might have bitterness lurking in you, and it's coming out in your sarcasm. Or maybe you're looking at life and going, boy, I just really want to protect myself. I just want to try to have a good life and not be hurt too much by loving other people too much. The God who is there, the God who is described in this story, wants to be trusted and can be trusted. And when we trust him, bitterness starts to shrivel up. So today we're going to look at from bitterness to the fullness of steadfast love. From bitterness to the fullness of a steadfast love. And Naomi is a gift to us in this story. Naomi is a gift to us because she lets us know that she is bitter. She is forthright. She's candid. I am bitter. The Lord is against me. And in doing so, she lets us know a little bit about what to look at and how to diagnose our own hearts and see where is it that we distrust, or where is it that we've become cynical, and where is it that we might be bitter in our relationship to God. She allows us, because she's so bold and candid with it, she allows us to start to sort out our experiences in life and how we view the experiences in life and interpret our lives so that we can move from bitterness to the fullness of steadfast love. So I want to look first at bitterness. Now, upon returning to Bethlehem, to Israel, in Israel, after about 10 plus years stay in Moab, the whole city is stirring because this whole village is stirring because Naomi has returned. And they're looking at her like, is this Naomi? Is this the Naomi that left? She looks different. She's not just older, but where's her husband? Where are her sons? And she's got this foreigner with her. What is going on? Is this really Naomi? And I don't know if you've ever been in a circumstance like this where you walk into a room and you know that everybody's talking about you and you see them whispering, is this so-and-so? Is this so-and-so? Is this Tim? What's happened? What's wrong with him? Naomi gets sort of fed up, and she just sort of calls it out. I sort of like Naomi. She just sort of says it like it is. I'm bitter. And here, she calls it out. She calls out all these people who are talking. She goes, don't call me Naomi anymore. I'm not Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought about calamity upon me? Now, Naomi's not changing her name legally in this situation. She's not even necessarily trying to give herself her own nickname. She's trying to say something about what her experience is like. The word Mara in Hebrew means bitter. The name Naomi in Hebrew means pleasant or good. And she's letting everybody know, I am not the woman that left. Let me just get it out there on the table. I am not the same woman that left. I left and I was full. I left and I had a husband and two sons. Everything was okay with the world except the famine. But I had everything right in my life, and now I've come back, and I am completely empty. I am bitter. I'm bitter. I don't know if you've been there yet. Life hasn't turned out the way you wanted it to. Naomi has experienced the two greatest losses that you can experience as a human being. She's lost a spouse, and she's lost children. So on one hand, we got to look at her and say we should be weeping with her. We should be weeping with her. She has experienced a great deal of trauma. Her spouse died prematurely. She had to bear a child. Right now, she's financially weak, massively financially weak. And she believes that God is against her. I don't know if you've ever been there, where you believe that God is against you. And you look at the circumstances at your life and you interpret them and you say, God, you have dealt bitterly with me. Now, like I said, Naomi is a gift because she allows us to do a little diagnosing of our own hearts as we try to look at some of the circumstances in our own life, because quite frankly, what Naomi does is she puts all the blame on God. God, you've dealt bitterly with me. But there's more going on in Naomi's life than just God working. And there's more going on in your life than God just working. And so we have to, if we feel abandoned, if we feel that God is absent, if we feel that God has done bitterness or behaved bitterly toward us, we have to do a little diagnosing. I want to suggest that we start with discerning our own decisions. This is not to put the blame for her husband's death and her children's death on her, but to start looking more holistically at our lives. The book of Ruth begins with a setting in the time of Judges, and the time of Judges was a period in Israel's history when the people of Israel had been brought into the promised land, and they had sort of taken over the promised land and that God had given to them, and yet they were also without a king. And so there's this recurring phrase in the book of Judges, which was written about the same time period in which Ruth was living. And there's this phrase that everyone did, there was no king in the land, and everybody did what was right in their own eyes. And that phrase is really important for us, because what the people of Israel did is they did name God as their covenant God. They named God as their God, and yet they lived any way that they wanted to live. And you see it all over the place in the book of the Judges. It's really terrible. And quite frankly, Elimelech and Naomi embody the same kind of spirit. They name God, but they live anywhere they want to. So, for example, one of the things that God told the people of Israel is that when you seek after other gods and you go after other idols, there's a relationship that God sets up, a covenant that I will bless you and I will watch over you and I will protect you. You are my people forever and I will bless your land and I will help your crops to grow and I will bring bounty and fruitfulness to your work. But if you go after other gods, I will bring famine in the land. I will to discipline you, to draw you back, to remind you that you have left me. And it's a dangerous place to be, to leave me, to run away from me. And so when it says that there's a famine in the land in the time of Judges and Elimelech and his family leave, they did the exact wrong thing to do. The whole point of a famine in the house of Bethlehem, the word Bethlehem means the house of bread. The whole thing, the thing to do in the midst of a famine when you're an Israelite is to return to God. There's repentance that needs to be done. Idols need to be taken care of and demolished. But instead of returning to God, Naomi's husband, Elimelech, takes his family in search of food and financial security away from the Lord. Away from the Lord. Now, God works all things together for the good of those who love him, but Naomi attributes all the what's going on in her life as she's blaming God for things, but she needs to put some of that blame rightfully to understand her own circumstances on Elimelech. Her husband didn't lead her well. And she went along with it. So at times, when it feels like God is against us, look around and see, are there decisions that you have made that have brought some calamities into your life? Are there decisions that other people that you're related to have brought into your life, and see them and name them? That's okay to name them. Because it might not simply be God is against you. It might be that others are against you. Also, investigate your view of God or your views of God. See, Naomi and Elimelech sort of show a couple things about their own hearts and the relationships here. One is, in relationship with God, one is their two sons, Milhon and Chilion. They are, those names are, if you know Hebrew, they're really weird to say. Those names are really weird to say because they're not Hebrew names. They're Canaanite names. And the Canaanites were the people who lived in the land that the people of Israel were supposed to dispel and not intermarry with and not interact with, because they would lead their hearts away from the one true God. And here you have two sons named after Canaanites' names. What's that telling us is that there's compromise. There's compromise in the family. But that's subtle. What's more interesting and scary and terrifying, it seems to me, and revealing is how Naomi seeks to bless Ruth and Orpah, her daughters-in-law, when they want to come and be with her and travel back with her to Israel. Ruth and Orpah want to return with her, but Naomi is not going to have it. And she sees in her own life, she sees only hardship ahead of her. And out of love for her daughters-in-law, she wants to protect them from some of this hardship that she's going to have to endure. Not only is Naomi weak financially, but if she's returning back to Israel, she's bringing Moabite women with her. The history of Israel and Moabites is not a good history. There's animosity there. There's bloodshed there. There's all kinds of bitterness and war there. And so to bring back these foreigners, there's potential for mistreatment, rape, social stigmas, and ostracizing. And so Naomi's like, no. Don't come back with me. So on one hand, out of love, she doesn't want them to experience mistreatment. But notice what she says to her daughters-in-law. Go back to your own family. Go back to your own mother. Go back and find your own husband in your own land. And go back to your own gods. And may the Lord be gracious to you. And may the Lord bless you. Naomi's expecting God to do something for these two women that he says he will not do. He will not bless those who seek after other gods. And so actually what's going on here is we see a little bit of a glimpse of Naomi's heart and her relationship to God is that she thinks that she can just live any way that she wants. And she names God and she hopes that God will bless her, but he's not going to. In the Midwest, in America, here in the Midwest, there's still a significant segment of the population that believes something similar to Naomi. They name God as their God and yet live any way that they want. See it all the time. Rationale goes something like this. Well, I'm not a Muslim. I'm not a Buddhist. I live in America. I must be a Christian. Oftentimes, people think they're Christians just because they live in the Midwest and go to church every now and again, and they're not some other religion. And they think that God's going to bless them just simply by, oh, I'm a Christian because I believe in God. But their hearts are so far, and they do whatever they want. And then when they find out that God doesn't bless them the way they think that God should bless them, they walk away and they reject God. This is one of the questions to ask people if they say, I don't believe in God. One of the great questions to ask when someone says, especially in the Midwest, I don't believe in God, is say, what God do you not believe in? Because I probably don't believe in him either. How about you today? Do you feel like you don't believe in God? Are you sure you don't believe in a God that you made up? That's who you've rejected? You haven't really rejected the real God who's there. Do you know what the real God who's there is like? Have you built your life on him? Now, this leads us to one other evaluation, and that is to evaluate our expectations for life. Naomi says in this statement that she's bitter, and she left Bethlehem full in the midst of a famine, and now she's returned back in the midst of a barley harvest that's about to start, and she returns empty. Now, on one hand, what she's talking about relationally is, yes, she has experienced all kinds of trauma, all kinds of pain. She has lost her husband. She has lost her two sons. I could not imagine what my wife would be like if she lost me and our three sons in a matter of a couple years. But Naomi is saying more than simply that she has experienced relational trauma and lost her husband and her sons. The words that she used are very important. She left full, and she's returning empty. What she means by that is that she left full of security, and she's leaving, and she's returning empty of security. Empty of security. See, in the ancient world, in an agrarian society that Israel was at the time, men were financial security, worked in the fields. And so she left with all kinds of financial security. Even though they're leaving a famine, they were going some other place, she knew that she would be taken care of. She knew that she would be okay because she had a husband who could work really well in the fields, and she had two sons who could do the same thing. Now she's coming back, and she's got a foreigner, a daughter-in-law. And we all know what daughter-in-law and mother-in-law relationships are like, right? Not always, but she's coming back. And what this reveals something about Naomi is that it's not just relational trauma that she's experienced. She's seeking to try to get her security from something other than God, from his steadfast love and immovable purposes to do her good. She's seeking to build her life on her husband, her sons, and the security that they give. And now she's empty. In bitterness or distrust, often we need something for our lives. We need something. If I only have this, if I only get this, or when I get this, then I'm going to be okay. We live with that kind of narrative. And then we're worried and we start to distrust when we don't see God doing what we think we need to survive. And God says, no, don't you see? I'll give you all kinds of good things, but the good things are not ultimate things that you can build your whole security on. They'll be taken away. What you need to build your security on is me, what God is saying. And the Lord is going to move and work in this Naomi, a bitter woman, and do far more exceedingly and abundantly than she could ever imagine that he would do for her. Because God is far more committed to her than she is to him. And we start to see the steadfast love of the Lord. Now, just going back a little bit here to Naomi, who was seeking to persuade her daughters-in-law to leave her. Eventually, Orpah does leave, but Ruth stays. And Ruth makes this statement, and this statement has been reverberating throughout human history ever since she made it. Ruth said to her mother-in-law, "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you." It's sort of like, and when you're reading through the narrative, it's like, Ruth has just had it. Naomi, stop. I'm going with you. End of story. It's amazing. And she says, "Where you go, Naomi, I'm going to go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people. Your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. And may the Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts me from you." This is quite frankly remarkable. Again, just given mother-in-law and daughter-in-law relationships in human history, for a daughter-in-law to commit this kind of way, no obligations whatsoever does Ruth have to love Naomi in this way. And Ruth is not going to choose her familiarity. She's not going to choose her mother's household. She's not going to choose her own people and find a husband back with the Moabites. She's not going to choose their own god, Chemosh. She's not going to choose the socially established pillars of security that she could rest in because she knows the culture and she knows everything that's going to happen over there as much as she can as a human being. She's not going to choose those things. She's going to choose to love Naomi at great cost to herself. Naomi was bitter, and Ruth experienced the loss of a husband as well, and she had no sons. After 10 years of being married, she had no sons. But she wasn't bitter. She was courageous. Instead of choosing to go back to the familiar, she chooses actually instead to cast her lot with her mother-in-law. It's not a way out of difficulty or pain, but the way to live, the way that you and I are made to live, is with this kind of steadfast love in the face of adversity. This kind of committed, courageous, loyal love. Why does Ruth do this? Why does Ruth commit herself in this way to Naomi? It's because she's already committed to Naomi's God. Your God will be my God. It's not just a future that I'm going to do this. It's like, your God shall surely be my God. Ruth believes in this God more than Naomi does. And Ruth knows only it seems what Naomi has taught her, and she's all in. And it leads her to be all in this relationship with Naomi. Ruth turned her back on what was familiar and what was secure, and she committed herself to an uncertain future with her mother-in-law. She chose to take on her mother-in-law's burdens. You're going to need to be fed. You're not going to be able to work in the fields anymore. You're older. I'm going to do all that for you. She takes on all that burden. She risks experiencing poverty with her mother-in-law, experiencing mistreatment from Israelites who have all kinds of animosity built up against the Moabites, and the sting of social ostracism. Now, maybe you've heard Christians talk about agape love. Agape is just the Greek word that means love. But there's an Old Testament word that means love as well. That is, it's hard to really translate into English. The word is chesed. Just sort of sounds like you're clearing your throat. Chesed. And God defines himself as a God of chesed in Exodus 34, that I am a God who is abounding in chesed, in steadfast love and faithfulness. In steadfast love. And Ruth embodies God's steadfast love to her mother-in-law. Steadfast love is a commitment that's demonstrated in the interest of another without respect to self-interest and what it might cost me to love you in this way. We sing the song Reckless Love here. That's what this song's getting at, reckless love. It's not reckless in that God's going to do a bunch of reckless things to people. No, it's reckless in the sense that God commits to love us without self-interest in mind, without the cost at mind of what it's going to cost him to love us so well. He takes it on and does it anyway. That's what Ruth does. See, God is far more steadfast in love than Naomi gives God credit for. And quite frankly, what I've come to see is I've been wrestling and working through these passages in Ruth. God is far more committed in steadfast love to me than I give him credit for. How about you? How about you? Now maybe you're wondering, well, God gave Naomi Ruth. I don't have a Ruth. If I had a Ruth, then I'd trust God. Ah, but you have something greater than Ruth. Far greater than Ruth. One, you have the scriptures. You have Ruth's story. You have Naomi's story. You're going to see how God does amazing and powerful things, how he restores Naomi's life, and how Ruth, even though she looks really weak and she's a foreigner, and Naomi just dismisses her in some ways and doesn't really see her as all that valuable for what she needs in life. At the end of the story, the people who ask, is this Naomi? The crowd's asking, who's Naomi? Shout, Naomi, Ruth has been more valuable to you than seven sons. She has loved you so well. So we get a chance to look and see how God shows his steadfast love to this embittered widow. But even more, we have someone greater than Ruth to tell us about God's steadfast love. Someone greater. Because quite frankly, over 1,000 years after Ruth went into Bethlehem, one of Ruth's great, 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 great grandsons entered into Bethlehem. His name is Jesus. Ruth becomes an heir of Jesus. Jesus is a descendant of Ruth, and Jesus is the greater and he's the truer Ruth. Ruth committed to Naomi a reckless and steadfast love for her. She turned her back on the familiar. She risked experiencing poverty. She risked experiencing mistreatment. She risked social stigma and ostracizing. She took on Naomi's burden at great cost to herself, but Jesus didn't just risk those things. He actually experienced those things for you and me. Ruth didn't experience them, but the true and greater Ruth, Jesus himself, did. Jesus experienced poverty for you. Jesus experienced mistreatment for you. Jesus experienced rejection for you and me. He took on our burdens at great cost to himself. Our burdens at great cost to himself. Jesus is the embodiment, the full and complete and beautiful embodiment of God's steadfast love. If you want to know what God is really like, you have to look at the cross of Jesus. His life, his death, and his resurrection. And the reason to turn to God is Jesus. And give everything to him is Jesus. And let your bitterness melt in the face of the cross. Ruth made a covenant with Naomi. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die. And Jesus has made a new covenant with you and me. He comes with a new covenant that's symbolized in bread and the drinking of cup, with eating of bread and drinking of cup of grape juice wine. And what God does is in Jesus, he says, with all of our sinful decisions, even with our false views of him and our divided hearts and with all of our attempts to try to get some kind of security in life apart from him, he enters in and he makes a covenant and he says in Christ, where I go, you will go. My people will be your people. Because I die, though you die, you will live. That's what this Jesus says to us. Just as I was buried for you, you will be raised with me.